Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And we are back from Thanksgiving. We are stuffed with turkey. We're also stuffed in a very tiny room here at Verizon headquarters, I guess, or our office, whatever we call that. It's very small. The furnace is on full blast. And we also have a window that's pretty much open to the street. So very, very great for recording, Sherlyn. Thanks a lot for choosing this room.
I feel like you like blaming me for everything, Devendra.
Today, we're going to be talking about mobile chips, and specifically Qualcomm, because Qualcomm just had a big event over in Hawaii where they invited a bunch of press and they made a ton of announcements. And I think it's worth talking about this stuff. You see these things going around. You see like Snapdragon plus model number plus all sorts of stuff. And this stuff happens all year round. Why is it important, Sherlyn?
I mean, I think we want to preface this by saying that this is probably one of the nerdiest things I'll ever talk about. I don't have a lot of nerd cred or geek cred, but this is where I like shine. And yeah, this stuff is important to know about because it powers every little thing that has a computer in your life. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, smartphones, obviously, when you mention mobile chips, is the first thing that comes to mind. But there's tablets, laptops, your computers. And I mean, think about it. Anything that has that can think for itself.
Anything that's smart. Yeah.
So smart displays. If you have a smart fan, it's got a chip. If you have, a Dyson air purifier has chips too. So
Sure. So it is worth, I think it is worth knowing what's coming next year, because you can basically, if you squint really hard, you can start to see the shape of like what the phones are going to be like next year, what the other cool devices are going to be like. So yeah, Qualcomm showed off a bunch of new stuff, starting with their flagship processor. We also got some mid-range tech and some interesting new features coming next year. Sherlyn, what is the star of the show?
Every year, whenever Qualcomm rolls out its new chips, it's always the flagship phone, right? The Snapdragon 865 is the highlight of the show. As I think expected, and it's we can probably guess it'll show up in next year's flagships. Like, hey, if there's a Galaxy S11, pretty much confirmed.
I don't know. Well, you think Samsung's going to make a new phone next year?
I don't know. I don't think it does want it wants to make money.
And we've also, I think, Xiaomi and Oppo are both like, yeah, we're on this. We have phones coming with this, right?
Xiaomi and Oppo tend to be companies that jump, into trends really quickly. But actually, the companies that were there this year announcing they'll be using these chips are Nokia and, Nokia as an HMD Global and Motorola.
Gotcha.
But I wouldn't be surprised if Xiaomi and Oppo. Yeah.
That gets a little more confusing because Nokia, they're not using this chip. They're using the other chip. And we're gonna start
we'll
to break this
it.
Down so you guys can understand what's happening. But basically, the 865 is going to be the one you're going to see in the most powerful Android phones next year.
Exactly. And, Qualcomm spends a lot of time researching features like, hey, how do we make our chip more appealing to these OEMs so that they want to use it to power their phones? So they'll think of power efficiency as one of the things. And that led, I think, Qualcomm to come up with fast charge as a whole thing way back when. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't attribute the entire technology to them, but they did push it.
They really did push it. And I remember seeing their demo units like early on, and it took years for anybody to even adopt fast charging. And even now, it's here. But you got to make sure you have the right power supply. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure like everything is just so for you to even take advantage of that.
And so that's why it's really worth paying attention to the features that Qualcomm says it's going to enable in the Snapdragon 865, because then their partners like Samsung, they do work with Samsung, right, will adopt them in future phones. So really what we're getting is sort of like a crystal ball look at what's to come in phones next year. To me, the 865 is kind of what everyone is looking for, but I was intrigued by some other things.
Sure. We'll get to that. But basically, what can we expect from the 865?
So,
faster, of course.
Every year, right? Yeah. There's performance improvements. So this year, we're getting about like 20% better performance, so faster, as well as more power efficient, so you get longer battery life if the battery's not being devoted to other stuff.
Yeah.
But what really blew me away with the 865, which is, again, one of the nerdiest things I'll ever say. When I took the briefing with Qualcomm about this chip, it was the first time I had ever heard the word gigapixel.
God.
I was like,
I did see that at their presentation. I was like, oh, we're doing this now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what did you think gigapixel was going to lead to?
I think Qualcomm is very desperate for more marketing buzzwords, and they just want a thing. so we can count gigapixels on our new chips.
So, you know? Gigapixel is not a marketing buzzword. It's an actual unit. A gigapixel is a billion pixels or 1,000 megapixels.
Sure.
And, I get that it's a fancy
word. What does it mean to me, Sherlyn?
I'm going to explain to you why gigapixel is important now. Okay. So, basically, on a CPU, there's a lot of different components. One of these is an image signal processor, or an ISP. Qualcomm has upgraded its ISP for the 865 to be able to process so fast, it's doing so at 2 gigapixels a second, which is basically 4 times more pixels per clock cycle than before. These are words I never thought I would hear myself say, but I am saying clock cycle.
Okay.
Basically, it's just really, really fast. And what this has enabled Qualcomm to do is to lower the clock speed of the image signal processor to be more
lowering
thermally
clock
efficient.
Speed is good.
Exactly.
Yes.
So when things aren't running at as high or as fast, there's less like heat generated. Mm-hmm. And so it can actually do more things. So smartphone cameras have typically been constrained by, obviously, thermals because, you know, the body of the phone is so small, it gets hot really easily.
If you ever try to, like, record 4K on your phone for too long, you'll feel it.
And it'll stop working, right?
Yeah.
So here's what this improvement will be able to do. Phones with the 865 will be able to record at high frame rates, at high resolution for much longer. And high frame rates means what? Like, you can do extremely slow motion, right? Mm-hmm. So a frame rate that's as high as 960 FPS, which is as far as we've gone on a phone so far, can actually record for as long as unlimited, according to Qualcomm, with the caveat.
God. I cannot wait for those boring YouTube videos of just,
super slow-mo?
Here's an hour of slow-mo.
You wouldn't do a video of Sophia in slow-mo for, like,
I don't know, one minute?
I do,
but it's a tool. You got to use it, you know,
sparingly.
Judiciously. Yeah.
Sure, what the thing enables is that, like, before, like, say with the Galaxy S10 or with a Sony Xperia XZ1 or something, you could only record in bursts of, like, 0.2 seconds of slow-mo,
really?
960 FPS slow-mo. So being able to have a little more control over when you start and stop slow-mo is actually important.
I don't think people really need more than, like, 240 FPS slow-mo. Things get ridiculous.
Speaking,
like, once you go much higher,
Speaking of 240 FPS, you can actually record slow-mo in 240 FPS at 4K resolution.
This
means a lot for people who create content, right? Who are making videos on their phones, want to post them to YouTube, all of that stuff.
But people creating content aren't using their phones for this. That's, I start to wonder, like, what are the actual practical applications of this? Because somebody, if you're a YouTuber or something, you have a nice camera. You have a real camera, you have a mirrorless, you have something. Unless you're like a high school kid just trying to get into YouTube, and then you may just use your phone or something.
I mean, it pushes, like, the limits of what a phone can do, and it also, like, lets people get into, for people who are more like beginner level, who want to do more of this stuff with their phone, they can experiment with it a little bit more. And I mean, I'm not a YouTuber, but I like to create content for my own social media. Sounds like such a weird thing to say, I want to create content, but there you
God.
Go. I'm very stoked for the camera improvements. That's not the only thing, obviously, that's new about the 865. There's, you know, the ISP being so much faster means it can help with processing more data. And so it can actually take or enable phones to take pictures that are as sharp as 200 megapixels, which is pretty crazy.
Sure. But we need a sensor.
Right.
Like, we need a lot of stuff to make that happen.
We'll need the components. Yeah. And Xiaomi already has a phone that's 108 megapixels sharp, right?
Yeah.
And so
I think Richard Lai wrote up something about that, and we saw some examples of it.
He sure did.
It looks pretty hot. Here's the thing, though. Like, these features sound really cool. It sounds like it's going to be very fast. I am wondering, how does the 865 compare? How will it compare to, like, Apple's best? And it's tough to tell right now because we don't have, like, official benchmarks of the 865 yet. But looking here at Geekbench Mobile, it is always really interesting that basically the top benchmarks are always Apple products. And right now it's like the iPhone 11 Pro Max is kind of leading the charge here. So I'm seeing, like, the first thing with the Snapdragon 855 is the OnePlus 7 Pro, which is one of the fastest Android phones out there. That's scoring a 728. The iPhone 7 with the A10 Fusion scores slightly higher than that. The iPhone 7, like, this is really interesting because Apple has always had this performance advantage, basically.
I think it begs the question of kind of how these benchmarks are testing,
sure,
right?
I
mean, you kind of have to wonder because I've used both an iPhone 7 and the OnePlus 7 Pro or Yeah. Right. And it's hard to just by my human eye observe a remarkable difference in speed between
and
the
benchmarks test very different things in actual practical usage. But my dad still has an iPhone 7, and like when I have to like play with that to deal with him, like it's still like it still feels snappy and smooth and fast in a way that honestly even a lot of like Android phones don't for me.
I almost feel like what it is software bloat sometimes. Yes, yes. It slows down all these Android phones. Apple has sometimes better software, but I will say that degradation over time is an equal problem for both OSs. Anyway, that was again.
Anyway, but basically, if you look at Geekbench's charts, which is what's really interesting, is Samsung's like their own mobile processor is the Exynos, which is also it's their own processor, also based on like ARM hardware too, right? So it's all sharing a lot with the Snapdragon line. Those are scoring faster than the 855.
It does sound to me then like when the company is able to make all the components of the chip of the phone themselves, they have an advantage. They can tune the CPU to work very well with their hardware and
it's
their software.
It's a tale as old as time. I'm reminded of like before Apple switched over to Intel, and I actually remember the very day that happened. Like I was working in IT, and I was like, oh man, first of all, this is going to mean we have to completely redo how we handle Macs, but also it basically means Macs are the same as PCs. But back when Macs were running PowerPC processors, like you couldn't really benchmark them directly against x86 chips because they just performed so differently. But they worked really well because they were finely tuned for Apple's hardware. So that relationship, that's basically where we are with iOS right now, because Apple is just going all in on developing their own stuff. They just picked up Intel's modem hardware at this point, like that whole business from Intel, which is surprising as hell. And who knows what that's going to mean in the future? Probably a more efficient 5G phone than maybe what we're going to see from other companies. How about 5G, by the way? Because like this is Qualcomm's flagship processor. Surely they thought of 5G somehow, right?
They did. The Snapdragon 865 is a 5G compatible phone with the giant caveat that it's not integrated.
5G compatible. That reminds me of like when HDTVs were getting off the ground. Like this is HD compatible, but not quite.
I don't even really understand how to explain this very well, just because it sounds like more of how it sounds like Qualcomm's packaging / marketing this themselves to manufacturers to like convince them to buy the entire package, right? Yeah. So basically the 865 doesn't come with its own 5G radio or modem on board. It's a separate chip. So if you see the marketing pictures of the 865, you'll notice two square things next to a nickel or a dime. Or a penny, as opposed to one little thing, which you'll see in pictures for its other chips that are integrated. So
that's cheating a little. Like, it seems like this is actually kind of a failure from Qualcomm. Like, I think a lot of people expected them to have this very nicely packaged all-in-one thing of 5G and their fastest chip, and they did not deliver that.
So I asked that exact question to Qualcomm when they briefed me. And the answer is that it's...
I've
been holding this back from Devendra and not telling him because I want to see his genuine reaction to this. Okay, the wording I was given was that we're bullish about 5G in every device launching with 865. The reason why we didn't integrate it was because 3 years ago, when the platform was being designed, we didn't want our partners to go through the painstaking task of deciding whether to integrate or make it a discrete modem. And so we just made it one option, discrete. And if you look at the multimedia features packed into this platform, you'll see why we kept them separate.
I mean, that's not an answer. That's an excuse.
That's the reasoning they're giving. And basically, to parse that PC speak for y'all, it just means that like if Qualcomm were to squeeze the 5G modem onto the chipset, then they wouldn't be able to give other features, like perhaps the ISP wouldn't be able to be as fast, or 4K HDR recording might not be able to be a thing, and they might have to have a smaller hexagon processor for less powerful AI processing. So there's a lot of That's what they're saying.
I mean, I see what they're saying. I hear the logistics of this. It just feels like, man, we want all these crazy features into the flagship processor to, like, I guess you'll just have to plug in this whole other thing here. Basically, none of this really means much to consumers. Like, you'll still get your very nicely packaged smartphone. But by having everything integrated, which is something AMD has done really well over the past couple of years in terms of, like, integrating CPU and GPU together, you can really have, like, a nice, efficient package. And efficiency is really what we want with smartphones. We want better battery life. We want, like, our stuff to perform better without draining as much power. And it's just kind kind of disappointing. The chip nerd in me is disappointed that Qualcomm couldn't pull this off. But it turns out...
They did. Yeah? Yes, I know you know this because we all did our homework. They have, right? Qualcomm did announce its very first integrated 5G modem on a chip. And it is the Snapdragon 765 and the 765G. Now, with the 7 label, we understand that this is slightly less high-end compared to the 865. But Qualcomm was able to use a 7-nanometer process and still include a 5G radio. Now, to be clear, this is a different modem than the one that's on or pairs with the 865,
but it's still a 5G modem.
It's still a 5G modem. Yeah. It hits slower speeds. It supports all the same technologies like millimeter wave, sub-6, dynamic spectrum sharing, or DSS is the acronym. But it hits only up to like 3.5 gigabits per second as compared to the 7.5 you'll get on the 865, which does that make a big difference to people? We don't know. But
yeah,
it does allow for all the things that you were talking about of having radio on the chip, right? The power efficiency that you'll get from there.
And that's kind of key. That's because we have 5G phones right now. There are a handful on the market. People testing them, they work. They're fine where you can find reception. But they are very, very hot. They drain a lot of power. They will drain that battery really quickly. It reminds me of when, like, the first LTE phones kind of hit the market. And I remember walking around Brooklyn and testing out the HTC Evo 4G, which was this big honking thing
with
a kickstand. It has a kickstand. Yeah, send your hate mail to Sherlyn. just shout on the internet to Sherlyn, and it'll find its way to her. But the Evo 4G was like a nice big honking phone back when HTC could actually make devices. But it was fast, but it was also too big and too clunky and had such little battery life. Like, it wasn't very usable. And it took us another couple of years for us to get like good LTE phones.
So the other thing you mentioned about you know, the 5G devices that exist today, yes, other than the fact that their battery life is impacted, they're also the highest end phones, the flagship phones that get them first, right? What the 765 could do is, because it's packed into clearly for mid range or slightly less high end phones, it should push 5G devices out on a more affordable level and put them in the hands of more people. And
that's,
I think that that's
need.
More
yeah.
important.
That's what we need. So we need like affordable next year, and certainly into 2021 and 22, we need affordable 5G phones. And I honestly think the carriers still need to like prove why would anybody need a 5G phone when like your LTE connection, assuming you're in a city, is in a very good, like, it's fast enough. So I think they still need to sell 5G. And I should also say, you know, we are, Engadget is owned by Verizon. So Verizon is a big carrier trying to push 5G. I will also say Verizon does not listen to us or, you know, influence us in any way. Otherwise, maybe their 5G rollout would be a little different.
Chips. Great, 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 right? But Qualcomm also makes other components. And one of these is the ultrasonic fingerprint sensor that it released. Ultrasonic fingerprint sensor.
Ultrasonic fingerprint sensor.
Okay. It's the one that the Samsung uses in the Galaxy Note 10 and the Galaxy S10 series for the in-screen fingerprint detection.
So you can put your thumb right on the screen. You don't need like a special thing. Yeah,
exactly. Compared to the rest of the industry at the time, which were using optical in-display fingerprint sensors like OnePlus Qualcomm took a different tack and went for ultrasonic, and, you know, they already at the time claimed that there were a lot of different benefits to that, which is, you know, you won't be able to fool it as easily, apparently, because it's not looking for an image of your fingerprint. Rather, it's, you know, detecting kind of the texture of the surface of your fingers. Sure. Great. Lots of security benefits. This year at the Tech Summit, Qualcomm announced a new version of its ultrasonic in-display fingerprint sensor called the 3D Sonic Max. And that Max usually has a connotation of bigger. And in this case, the big news about the new fingerprint sensor is that it's bigger, 17 times bigger. And the first time
it's
bigger
than before.
It's much bigger than before. The first thing I thought when Qualcomm first pitched me this, they were like, oh yeah, we want to, like, you know, brief you on the fingerprint sensor that's new. And I was like, well, what's so new about it? And they were like, it's bigger. I was like, huh? I was like, great. Well, you know, but after I took the briefing, got all the detailed information, I was like, oh wait, no, this is going to be a big deal. Huh, big deal. But it's not okay. So I didn't know this, I guess, before, sure. But I didn't know that, like, in existing mobile devices like your phone and even on your laptop sometimes, the size of the sensor is only 4 by 9 millimeters. And that's barely like there's a fraction of your fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And that means when people or your devices are trying to look for your fingerprint to identify you, they're really looking at just a sliver of it. So anyone else that has might not be, having the same exact fingerprint as you, but has a small portion that's similar enough.
That's
not a very realistic use case. Okay. But if we think about it that way, right? Uh-huh. That's what it's saying if it's a smaller piece. So a bigger sensor is inherently more stringent.
It gets more of your finger. Should be,
it's looking for more signs. It should logically already be more secure, but this time around, fingerprint sensor is big enough to detect 2 fingers at a time.
That's exactly what I want to do with my phone.
Look, I know the first impression you're going to get is like, oh my God, do I want to unlock my phone with 2 fingers? No, that's Devendra's voice, by the way. And what it really means is just additional security for your more sensitive information, like your banking app before you sign in. Like right now, I didn't really want to tell the whole world, but I guess I'll tell the whole world. Right now, I signed in my banking app with my fingerprint sensor, right?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Just don't tell everybody your PIN is 12345.
How did you know? So basically, I would be totally okay signing into, say, my credit card app with 2 fingers at a time.
Sure.
Or if I wanted to approve, like, a Google Pay transaction and they ask for 2 fingers at a time, mm-hmm. I'd be more than happy to for that added security.
You know what I really want? I want that, like, the HP privacy screen stuff.
Oh, I love
like,
that.
I would love, like,
on the phone.
If you're in a secure app, like, boom. Nobody can see on the periphery what you're doing. Like, it's only straight on. Maybe next year, Qualcomm, listen to us.
Screen tech.
Yeah.
This is hot. I just like it.
It's cool. And so what it also means is that it could be faster at determining your fingerprint too. Like, so you don't have to like hit like one specific area on the screen.
Exactly.
Because like with Touch ID and with the old things, like you had like this groove. You had like a thing that you knew you were going to hit.
You could tell.
With the on-screen stuff, you don't. It's just all screens.
Yes.
So I guess this could be more useful. I see
that. And also when you're enrolling your fingerprint now, you don't have to like lift and press a few times.
Yeah, one thing you have to do.
It's
like 30 seconds
times.
Of work.
It's 16 to 20 times now down to just one. All right.
Okay.
That's
nice.
It's great. Oh, okay. All right. And there's other benefits. Like it's just inherently just a bit more secure
and
also.
We'll see this when? Like several years from now, probably.
No, I mean, listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Qualcomm hasn't said anything. No partners have officially said anything. But I'm willing to wager a fair amount of my holiday bonus, which is $0, that Samsung is going to use it in the Note 11 or the rumored S11.
Yeah, that makes sense. Samsung is so thirsty. Samsung is always hot on whatever Qualcomm produces, like to get those features out there.
I don't know that thirsty is the right
word. They're so thirsty.
But okay.
How many flagship phones does Samsung have right now? They are the thirstiest of Android phone makers.
How many flagship phones does Apple have?
I mean, 3?
Yeah, that's the same number as Samsung. Anyhow, there's other features on the 865 also, right? Qualcomm launched this thing called the Elite Gaming Platform a while back, and the 865 and the 765G take advantage of some of them, not all. So there's this thing that the Elite Gaming enables called desktop forward rendering.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are familiar with desktop gaming software and the Unreal Engine, you have heard of forward rendering, which basically means you can get very intricate and sophisticated lighting effects process. And what happens is in the past when you needed to port this sort of software or processing over to a phone, you needed to make some trade-offs to make it run more efficiently or within the constraints of like temperature for such a device. The 865 will enable that without all of the trade-offs you have to make. So you get the same lighting effects on a phone as you would on a desktop.
So like desktop-class graphics basically on a phone. Which is nice. Android devices, Android in general, is not really thought of as a gaming platform. And that's something Apple has done a lot better with iOS. Like iOS games look better. And certainly with Apple Arcade, they're really like selling that platform as like a gaming-centric thing. So nice to see some progress here. Who knows what this will mean in the
end. Developers have to really get on board, and I think that this will mean better things for mobile gaming and maybe even streaming games in the future. There's a few other things with the gaming stuff too, like you know, updated GPU drives separated from the OS updates, as well as...
That's useful because OS updates take forever. So getting like more optimized GPU stuff.
It's still tied to the phone maker though, so like I wouldn't expect it to be that much speedier, honestly. But there's a lot, there's so much I could go into with the Snapdragon 865. I would say if you're dying for all of the details, please go to Engadget.com. I have like written an exhaustive piece on it.
So basically, Sherlyn, it seems like Qualcomm is just like still Qualcomming on. Like, this is the stuff we've been hearing for the past few years: faster chips, more features, things like that. I don't think they're really in any pressure to innovate or accelerate much, just because they're everywhere right now, right? Like everybody has to use Qualcomm's chips if you're not Apple.
No, come on. I mean, I would say if anything, Qualcomm, this is the time that Qualcomm's more nervous than ever before, because, you know, Apple and Qualcomm's relationship is seriously screwed.
Yes.
And
that lawsuit has been going on forever. Yeah.
Not just that one law. There's multiple, and it's going to go on forever. Then there's companies like Huawei that are making seriously, you know, powerful and impressive chipsets now. Like with the Kirin 900 series, Huawei is really taking the lead in some innovation. And then there's companies like Samsung making his own chips as well, Exynos, and you know, there's MediaTek, which
it
is
seems
less
like
known.
Samsung is like even scaling back a little, just because making chips is hard. It's a big thing. Huawei can do it because like they're
huge.
They're huge, and also they're mainly just focused on China. Like they're not really outside of China.
Yeah. They've also got a lot of experience making networking equipment, more so I think than Samsung. But here's the thing, right? You mentioned just now that like vertical integration, and we talked about this, vertical integration is generally a good thing for phone makers. And I agree. I do think, though, that Qualcomm still has a reason to exist, because not all companies can afford to or have the expertise to make their own chips.
That's basically what I said. It's like they're here. This is sort of like why maybe I'm a little disappointed that their flagship didn't get the integrated 5G, because like there's no serious competition. There's no like AMD nipping at their heels like there is for Intel. And that, by the way, that whole fight between AMD and Intel over the past few years has led to cheaper chips and better hardware and like a lot of great stuff. Qualcomm just doesn't really have that, and they're just going to keep trucking on, basically, right?
This is a funny question, really only for people who know the industry very well, but would you consider MediaTek to be a good competitor for Qualcomm?
So MediaTek is, you know, occasionally you'll see us write about them in Engadget. We don't write about them as much as we do like this Qualcomm stuff, but their hardware is it like in what, smart devices? So like smart speakers, you know, simpler things.
TVs, soundbars, your smart displays. MediaTek's in a lot of things, actually.
Sure, but it's more, you know, they're in like everyday objects, whereas Qualcomm's like focused on like phones and tablets and like smarter, more computing.
More demanding. Device.
Yeah, more demanding. And, you know, I just feel like Qualcomm is sitting pretty too, because they basically helped develop the 5G standard. Like this is all stuff they should know. Like, they should know how to integrate 5G better into their hardware. So,
yeah
it's a little disappointing.
Not to deviate too far, but just because you mentioned 5G, I was very disappointed to find out that, like, some of the technologies that Qualcomm shared with me when they were, you know, talking about 5G earlier was beamforming and beam tracking. These were technologies that were supposed to be, you know, pushing forward millimeter wave, but I just learned quite recently that these aren't actually in any of the 5G capable devices just yet.
Womp.
So that was very sad. But here's the thing. Another sign that Qualcomm is at least a little nervous about its position in the industry is all its other products, right? They don't only make chips for phones anymore. They also make PC chips. And the Windows on Snapdragon platform has been brewing for the longest time, and we're both kind of giggling
right now.
Yeah,
you really like that Surface Pro X.
I really loved it.
It's really going very well.
I was very bullish and very excited for Windows on
Snapdragon. I've yet to see... the Snapdragon laptops you've brought in, they look very pretty. They often have nice hardware. They function terribly because Windows as a platform has never like really, a lot of software doesn't work on ARM. It's not built for ARM.
Yeah,
basically.
And that's a massive problem. I will say that the performance is all right. It's not the you know, SQ1 chip that's on the Surface Pro X, which is, you know, co-engineered by Microsoft and Qualcomm. I didn't feel like it was super slow or anything. It was fine, except for when you're using Chrome too much.
Things don't work.
But the major problem is that Microsoft and Qualcomm need to figure out a way to either get every app on Windows on ARM or find a way to tell people when something's not compatible. Because right now, when you're trying to install an app or when you're trying to download an app, there's no clear indicator as to whether this will run on your system or not. And that's the biggest problem about Windows on Snapdragon. But, you know, this week, Qualcomm also unveiled two new chips for the Windows on Snapdragon platform called the 8C and the 7C. One of the big problems about Windows on Snapdragon devices before was that they were very expensive for no reason.
Sure.
And so the 8C and the 7C are more, you know, mid-range and entry-level devices to encourage kind of the growth of that sort of machine in the Windows on Snapdragon or the Snapdragon PC
space. So they'll be even slower but still not work with
many apps. I don't know if they
totally
thought this through.
I don't know about the strategy here. It's things like this. They did. They also showed off the XR2 chip, which is going to be something in like all-in-one VR headsets, sort of like the Oculus Quest. That's interesting.
With a surprise bonus of 5G.
5G.
Which kind of makes sense, right? Because 5G is going to be in everything. 5G is not only supposed to be good for your phones, but it's meant to kind of power this ever-present, you know, intranet.
Basically, I want 5G to be a thing. I just know, like, looking at the reality of the situation and covering this stuff for years, it's such a mess. Like, once 5G works on VR, I feel like we'll have made it, because VR requires really low latency, a lot of data. Like, if you can make that happen on an all-in-one headset, then we're going to be great.
I will say I have seen demos of VR on 5G. I mean, I think you have to. And yeah, no, that future is quite pretty.
Okay, so we've done our homework. Sherlyn, thank you for the Qualcomm primer. What does this mean for next year's phones? Like, will they look any different? Will they function any differently? What can we expect, do you think?
I think we can expect serious improvements in camera performance in next year's flagships.
Gigapixels!
Yeah, gigapixels!
Sure, sure.
And then maybe, you know, next year's laptops might have 5G. I mean, Lenovo's already confirmed that it
Lenovo's
will have
confirmed
a 5G
one.
Laptop.
We're hearing certainly a lot of that. I feel like that's going to be a big thing at CES. Although, that's, you know, at 5G modems, that's not part of, like, their new slate of things. Like, 5G and laptops, that's an easy thing. What do you think this means for phones? Like, will this help the dual-screen devices we've been hearing about, folding devices, like,
so as
new
a,
form factors? Yeah.
As a person who covers chipsets like you do, you know, I sometimes get bored by, like, how every year the news is 35% better power.
Yeah.
But I think I now see that this is where we've been kind of building towards, right? We need all this power for a reason, and that is because now one chip,
we need another screen.
Now one chip can power two screens or a one giant folding screen, and you know, still be power efficient enough so that the same size battery can last you all day. And you know, hopefully this means that we'll see more of these. I'm not sure that the 865 has the power to do that, but we'll see. But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think form factors, as much as I loathe that term, are going to change too much.
I mean, we saw the new Moto Razr, which has one of the wildest, you know, ideas for a folding phone, which I'm not something that super compels me, but that thing is running a very slow, old Qualcomm chip. And I think that's very telling. Like, they really need something low power. That's a device made for style, not for function.
It's so thin and it's so pretty. And I think some people even saw it coming. But the surprise there for me, and I wasn't surprised by the Razr, the folding one at all, but the fact that it uses a Snapdragon 710baffles the hell out of me.
Which is a two-year-old chip?
2 years old, because the current generation before the 765 was the 730.
No one's going to get that Razr basically to run the latest games. You're going to get that to pop
show
open that
off.
Thing and show off and do the sort of like, it reminds me of like when the Matrix came out, and like that was the Nokia there.
The
it was
banana
like one
phone.
Of one of the first ones that like kind of flipped up. That was a good feeling. I do miss like contouring with my phones. One of my first, I think my first 3G phone was the Helio Ocean, which was a rebadged, you wouldn't know in Singapore. That was a rebadged Korean phone, but it folded in, it like slid in two ways. It folded up, it slid up vertically to get to the number pad, and it slid horizontally for the keypad.
That's
for like,
pretty cool.
Yeah, typing. And that was pretty wild. Like, we were in a really weird time. So I'm looking forward to like weird devices like that. I'm not as looking forward to like folding screens, but certainly things like what Microsoft is doing with the Surface Duo. I don't know. Devices next year are going to be interesting, at least.
And Qualcomm and other chip makers will be there to power it all.
You sound very tired, Trillin. We are all very tired here because we are also very much in the midst of our CES prep for early January. So strap in, people. Like, there's going to be tons of news. That's mainly what we're working on, and a lot of retrospectives looking back on this year too. So that's going to be a lot of our December content. I just want to survive this month and survive CES and emerge victorious into 2020, please.
I'm already sick, so you all have that to look forward to.
Yeah, and also if any of us get sick after this episode, blame Sherlyn.
I am patient zero.
Let's move on to Engadget Picks. This week I just wanted to talk about Knives Out, which is the next film by Rian Johnson, a director I love very much. I've loved all of his movies. I remember seeing his first movie, Brick, in a crappy little theater in Hartford. I dragged my brother there. There was nobody else in the audience. It was just me and my brother. But like when I started my movie podcast, one of the first things we did was like, let's get Rian Johnson on. Let's try to talk to him. So around Brothers Bloom and Looper, we've had a couple interviews. He's a super cool guy. He loves trolling us with his banjo. This movie is one of the best times I've had in the theater this year. So if you're looking for a fun, like a nice thing to go see to get your mind out of like the holiday malaise, or a fun thing to see with your family, it is funny. It's a great little murder caper. It's a classic whodunit, but he is so smart. The dialogue is so snappy and the characters are all so great. And I also love Daniel Craig in full-on like Southern mode, similar to like Logan Lucky. In Logan Lucky, he plays like this explosives expert, quote unquote, named Joe Bang. In this movie, Daniel Craig plays a basically like a New Orleans detective named Benoit Blanc.
Oh God!
And it's just like so good, like a great like Cajun accent he's working on. It's so much fun, Cajun slash like Southern fried detective stuff. Great movie, great cast. I'm sure Sherlyn will like it a lot. What have you? Surely your pick, Sherlyn, will be just as interesting.
My pick is pretty hot. I bought myself a fantastic gift this Black Friday, and it arrived a few days ago, and I'm so happy. It's a shredder. And I have to tell you, I am one of the most paranoid people there can be when it comes to my privacy. I'm the sort of person that will magnetize my hard drive before like I do anything, like disposing of it. So I bought a shredder off of Amazon. It's an Amazon Basic. It's like Amazon Basic like me.
Cross cut or straight cut?
Straight cut, sadly. So
how many pages per minute?
You know too much about
shredders. How fast is the motor? Like, can it...
2.4 gigahertz.
Gigapixels.
Gigapixels.
I used to sell shredders, so I know way too much about this stupid stuff.
I mean, listen, I for the first time last night, I actually shredded so much it jammed up, so that was not fun. But
yeah, there you go. I warned you. I literally
you did. You did. I will say, I wanna like give like a quick explanation as to why like I think a shredder is important. Like, I get a lot of paper mail still, so it's really ridiculous.
Trillin's
I don't want people
a
to
spy.
Have.
Okay.
I also am a spy for Engadget, and I mean, pharmacies when they give you your medication, give you this like long list of instructions, but they print your name like 700 times along with all your identifying information. And so I really think, and even as a piece of advice for anyone out there, just make sure you even just tear up your you know, any
tear
piece
up,
of paper,
or, you know, throw it in a bag and soak it in water. That'll also
that's
destroy
actually
the
clever
paper.
I should have done that. Or burn it. No, don't burn
don't
it
burn
don't
it.
Start a fire in your home. Don't just don't. But yeah, so the shredder is like my new pet. I don't like actual pets, and I, you know, want to get a robot dog, but for now,
for some
I
reason
feed
it keeps
shredder.
Hurting you whenever you pet it. I don't know why.
Because of my wet hands. Yeah, so but you know, I do have a lot of questions for you about my shredder, Devendra. Why did I get a paper jam?
Thank you. Because you didn't take a break. That's why those stats also
they do
mean
also
a lot.
Overheat.
Like, you need to let they overheat. They will get jammed up. So you gotta like take it easy, go one at a time. If you have one that takes like credit cards and
yes,
CDs,
mine does.
Yeah, then you gotta be extra careful. Shredders, I think, are a really good thing for any like home office. Certainly if you want to be secure.
And Engadget, we care about your digital privacy and your real life privacy. And also, if you have any shredder questions, please hit up at Devendra on Twitter. And please find the like weirdest question about shredders you can ask, please. Well, everyone, that's it for our show today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online
at Devendra on Twitter, and also at the /filmcast at /film.com. Go there for my Knives Out review.
If you want to ask me how my Shredder is faring lately, you can hit me up on Twitter at ShirlinLowe. Please send us any questions or feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on literally anything that gets podcasts. We're also on Spotify now. And come back next week for a brand new episode.
Happy Friday.